Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, before we get started here, I would just like to remind you that the London School of English, where I used to work, is running a promotion for my listeners, and for a limited time, you can get 10% off all their online courses, and those are proper, extensive, professionally developed courses for General English, Business English, IELTS and TOEIC exam preparation, Legal English, and English for other specific purposes. So if you or perhaps someone else you know is looking for a decent online course that will arm you with practical skills and language that you need to be competitive in English, check out the London School of English online at londonschoolonline.com and use the offer code LUKE10 at checkout to get your 10% discount. Okay, right then. Also, you can just click a London School of English logo on my website, that'll take you to the same place, but just make sure that you use the offer code to get the discount, LUKE10, LUKE, and then the number 1 and the number 0, right? LUKE10. Okay, it couldn't be more simple. All right, now let's get started with this new episode, and here we go. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Okay, so hello, welcome back, and here is part 2 of this conversation which I recorded with Andy Johnson and Ben Butler in a hotel lounge recently in Paris. If you haven't listened to part 1 yet, you might want to check that one out first. At the end of part 1, we paused the podcast in order to buy another overpriced and undersized beer from the hotel bar. And in this part, we've bought our tiny expensive beers. And we've continued the podcast by discussing Andy's presentation on the subject of millennials, okay? So that's the next thing we're going to talk about, millennials, that generation who come into adulthood in the 21st century, this generation that so many people have written about and done management training seminars about, this generation of young people who've been labelled by some as lazy, entitled, self-centred, distracted by technology and hard to manage. This group of people that probably makes up the majority of my audience, in fact. This generation of people that probably includes you. And so what do you think about millennials and the way in which millennials have been described? Is it a fair assessment? Are millennials lazy, entitled, self-centered, distracted by technology and hard to manage? Or is this just sort of small-minded prejudice against a younger generation that's facing just as many challenges as previous generations, but in ways that are harder to notice? What do you think about the whole subject of millennials? And also, how should we be teaching this generation in our English language classes? If you are a millennial, what do you think about learning English in the classroom environment? And the sort of traditional approaches to classroom management from the point of view of a language learner who probably comes from the millennial generation. So how should we be teaching millennials in our English language classes? That was the subject of Andy Johnson's talk at the teaching conference that we all attended recently. And so there is some discussion on that in this part of the podcast episode, because that's how we like to spend our Friday evenings, obviously, sitting around talking about millennials and stuff. But as you will hear, the conversation does turn into a kind of anecdote sharing session afterwards about some cultural misunderstandings that we've experienced as English teachers. So we talk about Andy's presentation on millennials first, and then we end up kind of just talking about our lives as English teachers and what it's like to be an English teacher. And as I said, the cultural misunderstandings that we've all experienced as English teachers, kind of coming into direct contact with people from so many different cultures with different levels of English, you know, and there are lots of amusing cultural misunderstandings that happen in our jobs. So we talk about those and tell some stories about that. And there are plenty of other tangents, including some detailed descriptions of what we all look like and how we're dressed at one. Yeah, that's right. We do. We, for some reason, we start talking about our appearances. So watch out for language to describe things like physical appearance, clothing and stuff like that. And also, you'll hear one particularly funny story from Andy near the end of the episode. It's a story that I really love, and I always find it funny. And you know what? I don't need to tell you everything you're going to hear in this episode, do I? No, I don't. I don't need to go into all the details. All you need to know is that it's going to be brilliant, all right? And even more amazing and awesome than the last one. So strap in and let's fly back to the hotel lounge in Paris on a Friday evening in the not too distant past with some mini bottles of beer with giant prices. And here we go. The podcast has been unpaused. We've got two new bottles of beer. No, three.
Three bottles, yeah.
Yeah, this is our second bottle here in the foyer. Right, so we talked about Ben's presentation. What about you, Andy? What's yours about?
My talk was all about millennials.
What's that?
Well, millennials are a group of people that were born... Well, there's a conflicting research about this, but essentially... Anybody born in the 80s or the 90s, I would say, is a millennial. And what we're seeing, certainly where Ben and I work, is that the majority of the people we're teaching now, the average age is around about the same age as those people born in the 80s and the 90s. And they're a very interesting generation because they're the first generation to have grown up with the internet, the first generation to grow up in such... a volatile and unusual kind of environment when you think about political stability and particularly financial stability and, you know, recessions and so on, and Brexit in the UK and Donald Trump last week. So all these things going on in the world that are very kind of...
Shit.
Yes. I was searching for the word, Ben, but you're right. Yeah, very shit. But no, they're kind of affecting a generation like no other. And as a result, in terms of what we're trying to do as teachers, we need to make sure that what we are teaching and, more importantly, how we're teaching people will reflect the kind of needs that they have.
Right.
So it's an interesting point because, I mean, it's something that I've been doing a lot of work on for quite a long time. And Luke and I did a talk here in Paris 4 years ago about some courses that we'd written for this particular group of people.
An award-winning talk, I should add.
They told me today about this. They won an award.
We won an award for best contribution to
talking.
British culture. No, it was the best contribution to talking.
That's right. European Championship of Talking.
Best Talking 2012.
Yep. Yeah, nobody talked better in 2012 except for me and Luke.
That's right. It was the best presentation by a first-time speaker.
First time speakers, yeah, and it was the first time you and I ever did a talk. Really,
that's right.
I think certainly the last time you and I've done a talk together.
Yeah,
I think we've both done things since, and I think that's
the first and last. It was an award-winning first and last talk.
I think they realised that they had to retire the award. They were never going to get anything quite as good as that again.
So we did a talk at this thing that was called... It was a similar conference to the one you're doing now.
It was a symposium.
It was the BSIG Tessel France Symposium or something. I don't know what the name
of it was.
Something
like that, yeah.
It was basically a business English teaching conference, and a number of people did talks. It was in the same place that you're doing yours in now. Mm. And we did a talk about creating materials for business English courses. And the video's on YouTube.
It is, yeah.
And
get searching for that quick.
Search for that. It's not the most exciting. It's not exactly a cat video. It's not as entertaining as a...
I'd say there's better videos out there on the internet.
Yes, I think so. It's not exactly up there in the top 100 most viewed videos on YouTube.
It's just outside. It's 101, 102.
Yeah, that's right. If we'd had a cat in the video, it would have been a different story.
Yeah, well, I did say at the time we should put a cat in
there. And I was like, no, we can't put a... We don't bring the tone down with a cat. And Andy was like, that's a bad idea. We're not going to get on YouTube with that. Anyway, we did a talk about designing materials for business English for younger learners and probably this age group that you're talking about, the millennials.
Yeah.
I think that the majority of my listeners fit into that category.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, but aren't you millennials?
Well, we saw Andy's talk earlier on, and Andy defined what millennials are, and it turns out that you and I are sort of on the cusp.
Yeah, so we're called cuspers.
We're cuspers.
Cuspers,
yeah.
Because we're on the edge, on the cusp.
Yeah, essentially, if you were anybody born between 1975 and 1980 is called a cusper. So they kind of don't really fit with Generation X, which was the previous generation, and they don't really fit with the millennials, but they kind of have elements of both. So, okay. Yeah, I imagine most of your listeners were probably born after 1980.
I probably think so, yeah. The age group tends to be sort of between 18 and 35.
Yeah, that's absolutely the right age for what I was talking about, yeah.
That's the largest age group, and so they're the millennials, okay? Mm. So it's that age group. So in terms of generations, we had the baby boomers, which were born in the 60s, post-war?
Yeah, baby boomers would be our parents or maybe your grandparents, post-war up till about the mid-60s, I think, and then you had Generation X.
Generation X is like punk and that sort of new wave movement. If, talking about music.
Yeah, and certainly in terms of how they viewed the world, they're deeply mistrustful of corporations and governments and, you know, very, they had a real thread of protest in them. Mm. And then you had the millennials, or often they referred to as Generation Y as well, because it followed on from Generation X.
I thought that was because they were just asking why all the time, you know?
Like, why?
Why have I got to do this? Why is everything shit? Why?
I don't think they do, though.
It's actually the letter Y, is it?
Yeah, it's just the letter Y.
Because
yeah.
It's after, it's X and then Y.
X, Y. And so, I suppose, so what's next?
Z?
Well, there is talk about Generation Z now.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But they're all 5 years old.
Well, yeah, they're all tiny.
It's like Generation Z, what are they interested in? Pooing and...
Sleeping.
Sleeping and pooing.
Yeah.
And cartoons. Yeah. That's all they care about.
Those guys. They've got a rude awakening coming when they get older, yeah.
So, go on. So the millennials then, what is it that marks them out as being different to other generations?
Well, I think the millennials are interesting in that they're digital natives. They're the first generation to grow up with the internet and that kind of the fact that you can get all sorts of things very quickly, very easily. And they've grown up with technology like no other generation. So I think the point I made in my talk was that it took 38 years for the 50 millionth radio to be sold, but it took just 80 days for the 50 millionth iPad to be sold. So
wow.
It's a generation that's growing up not just with new technology, but it's constantly evolving, it's constantly changing. And so, you know, you with your smartphone and with everything else, you've got so many apps and different kinds of technology there that you are completely familiar with and comfortable with and able to use.
Yeah.
And for older generations, and certainly a lot of the people that were at my talk today who are baby boomers, you know, people in their 50s and 60s, it's a completely alien concept. Like, how can you guys possibly understand how to use all these things? You know, it really puzzles them. It really troubles them. They find it very, very difficult.
So listeners out there, most of you who are millennials, the older generation don't understand you. They don't understand what you're doing.
They think you're weird.
I think there's a lot of... one of the things I wanted to address in the talk was the fact that millennials tend to be criticised. They tend to be called lazy. They tend to say they've got a short attention span. They're not loyal employees. But the whole point of my talk was, well, let's look at why that might be. So, for example, a lot of millennials are accused of being job hoppers and not being a loyal employee. So job hopper, you're constantly changing jobs every 6 months, a year or whatever. But then when you look at what's going on in the world and the fact that there aren't any jobs out there.
There's no jobs, no contracts, no hours.
Exactly. So you can hardly blame this generation for being job hoppers, if you like.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically the millennials are given a bad press.
Absolutely.
By the older generation, but in fact it's just that they're it is a difficult time to be growing up.
Mm.
Yeah, because of the current climate. So in terms of being a teacher then, or how does that affect the way in which you're teaching these younger people?
Well, for example, if you take the analogy of the jobs, then, you know, what we need to be doing, I think, is preparing people much more for that agile or fluid kind of career. So interview skills, brand building, like writing your CV, all those kinds of things. I think we need to be doing much more of that with our learners, particularly if you're listening to this and you want to get a job in English or you know, in England or any English speaking country. but you don't know how to interview in English, then that's an essential skill. And if your teachers aren't teaching you that, then I think they're failing you.
Yeah. So you're saying that these millennials, one of the things that defines them is the fact that they do move between jobs a lot. Absolutely. Also, I suppose probably English, having some sort of familiarity and fluency in English is probably one of the things that marks them out. We heard one of the people in the audience today talking about how she was teaching 15 years ago, and then she left teaching and she came back and she noticed that the general standard was much higher.
Much higher, she
said. Her point was that the general fluency was higher, if not the accuracy.
Right, that's
and
interesting.
And she made the point that this generation, this younger generation, if you like, this millennial generation, they spend so much time online. Particularly, she made the point about online gaming and how they're exposed to English in ways that previous generations never would even dream of.
Yeah.
So
Luke's English podcast.
Like Luke's English podcast.
Yeah.
And so she said, you know, they're much more able to produce language, even if it isn't accurate.
Right. Absolutely. Ah, interesting. Interesting changes in the world today.
Yeah.
English for specific purposes. English for millennials. It's all getting very sort of specific and tailored to different learning needs and situations and things. It's good. I like that. I like the way that our industry is sort of adapting to the needs of all of the people out there who need English.
Yeah, well, I think the main reason for that is there's more people who are engaging with English, and therefore there's more niches and specific areas and generational considerations that we as teachers need to think about.
Do you think it's a better idea for my students to learn a very specific aspect of English, or to try and learn all of it?
Well, it's a good question, and I think that there's increasingly two kinds of English learners in the world nowadays. You've got those who, it's an increasingly small group, who try to be proficient, and they're the kind of student that will do the first certificate, the advanced certificate, the proficiency, and they try to absolutely master the language. Very few learners are doing that nowadays. What we're seeing is increasingly learners are they're kind of becoming generally intermediate in level, but they've got these big spikes in their ability where they're very, very good in certain contexts, i.e. their work, what they need to do for a living. And a lot of what I do at the moment with online learning is trying to address that need. So what we're trying to do is to say that, okay, your overall level of English might be intermediate, but you can be advanced in giving a presentation or doing a negotiation or doing a meeting, anything like that, you know. And I think that's increasingly the way it's going.
I imagine that spike that you mentioned, that they're all at a sort of an intermediate level, but they have these big spikes in specialist areas. Mm. That's probably vocabulary, isn't it?
Yeah, more than anything. It comes back to what Ben's talking about with ESP.
The specific vocabulary, like Andy mentioned, like one of the analogies I use is those branches, the trunk of the tree and the leaves. And that specific vocabulary is those leaves that are hanging on.
Right.
The leaves don't just sit there, they're hanging on the tree, you know?
Right.
So it might be quite a little tree. But it's
a bush,
a bonsai tree. No, but it's got a lot of leaves on it.
Right, I see. Like a very healthy bonsai tree.
More like a bush than a tree. Yeah.
So what was I going to say? I was going to say something really profound and really, really fascinating, but I just suddenly can't remember what it is.
Just got sidetracked by the bush.
Yeah, bonsai. Yeah, exactly. So many times it's happened before, Ben. Sidetracked. Okay, great. Great. Well, good. Good, good, good. Fantastic. Excellent.
Yeah.
How long have you been teaching then, you two? Ben?
I did my first qualification in the year 2000.
Mm.
So pretty much since then, actually.
About 16 years.
Yeah,
about the same as me.
Yeah.
Andy Johnson?
I was 2003 when I trained to be a teacher.
Okay. Right.
So I'm a little bit behind you guys.
Okay.
Novice over here.
I know, bloody. 13 years. 13 years is a... I can't believe you're talking at this conference, only 13 years experience.
I'm feeling out my depth.
Honestly. Okay. And what's it like then being a teacher? I mean, obviously, the people who listen to this podcast, they're all learners of English, most of them. I've got some teachers who listen to this, but most of them are learners of English, so they know all about being learners of English. What's it like being a teacher of English then? Is it good? A good job? Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. I was waiting for you to answer, Ben, because
so
you've got quite a good... I think you said to me once that being a teacher, particularly in London, is almost the second best thing to traveling, because you get to meet all the really interesting people from around the world, but you don't need to get on a plane to do it.
Exactly. And, you know, I used to travel quite a lot, but I don't so much these days because I've got other commitments in my life.
Two children. Right.
But I still get to meet some fascinating people from all around the world, from all walks of life, all professions, and I learn a lot from them.
Yeah, that's one of the I guess the first thing about being an English teacher is that it gives you the opportunity to travel, first of all. In the first sort of 10 years of your teaching life, you travel and teach in other places. But then if you're lucky enough to like work in London as an English teacher, as you said, it means that all these people come to London every year to learn English. And if you're living and working in London as a teacher, you get to meet all these people, and they bring with them all of their experiences and stuff like that.
Their culture, their knowledge. And it's just fascinating.
It really is. And part of what Ben's presentation tomorrow, he talks about some of the really interesting people that we've had in the school in the last few years. So there was like...
Who have you had at the school? I mean, at London School of English, it's quite a kind of prestigious school, and it's quite well known. Who have you had as students? Any interesting people?
We had a Brazilian footballer.
That's right.
Yeah.
His name was Jair de Oliveira.
He was
the captain of the Brazilian national team in 1994. He got injured, I think, or substituted during the World Cup 94. But that year, Brazil won the World Cup. So he was a World Cup winning Brazilian
captain,
Brazilian footballer. So, yeah, I taught him as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we had him.
We had a member of the Thai royal family.
Really? A Thai princess?
And, yeah, she was one of the princesses, and her son was one of the heirs to the throne.
Wow.
So
proper
she
royal
never
stuff.
Actually came to the school on her own. She came with about an entourage of 30 or 40 people.
Seriously?
Yeah.
And they used to throw petals on the floor in front of
her. It was like that movie, you know, the Eddie Murphy film, Coming to America?
Yes. Yeah.
It was a bit like that at times. If anyone's seen that movie,
if she went to the ladies' toilets, her maids used to go in first and throw petals all over the shop.
Seriously, so she wherever she walked on fresh petals.
Pretty much, but she was here for quite a long time, and I noticed that the petals gradually began to decrease and then disappear. I think they ran out of. I think they couldn't find a petal shop in London.
Eventually, they were like, "Princess, I'm afraid the petals are far too expensive in London."
Yeah.
But never mind. It's fine. I'm over the petals. It's okay.
Yeah, we also had a sex therapist in recently.
Wait, a sex therapist?
Yeah, she wanted some individual tuition.
I bet she did.
Yeah, I didn't get that assignment, unfortunately. But
So
somebody did.
What's a sex therapist then?
To be honest, I don't know, but I guess they give you therapy in relation to your sexual desires, could we say?
They don't tell you how to do it.
Okay, then. And so that's certainly English for specific purposes.
It's very specific, yeah.
It's
way above my head, but...
Yeah, okay. Not everyone else's heads, though, I suppose.
We also had a guy who cultivated potatoes. He was the chief supplier of KFC.
Really?
Supplied them with their potatoes for their chips.
Wow. Yeah.
We had a guy that was responsible for landing the Philae satellite. They landed that satellite on an asteroid.
Yeah, it was a European space project.
That's right, yeah.
They landed it on a flipping asteroid.
It was insane,
unbelievable project. And so you had the guy...
He was the guy that was part of the team that got the thing to land on it.
Seriously?
So, yeah, he got the thing to land on the meteor, the asteroid, and then they said, well, you know, that's your job done. You've got 3 months off now. Go and do what you want. So he came and studied English.
Brilliant. And I bet he talked about that asteroid a lot, didn't he?
Oddly enough, he didn't, because really? it was so out there as an idea, the fact that you could actually even do that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was quite difficult for him to explain even in his own language, let alone English.
I imagine on day one, he was like, you know, with all the other students, all these kind of like 20-something millennials, and he's there, and they're like, so what do you do? Oh, I'm a student. What do you study? Oh, I study, economics. Okay, what about you? Well, I landed the Philae lander on an asteroid, and they're like, what? It's too complicated to explain.
Yeah. I remember that very clearly, because I remember waking up and putting the news on, and they'd had this success, they'd managed to do it, and you saw everybody in the European Space Agency celebrating, and it was like 8:45 in the morning, and I'm like, That, they've done that today. That, already today, they've had that massive achievement. What am I going to do today?
It's only 9:15 and they've landed a robot on an asteroid. And I've hardly even had a cup of coffee yet.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's incredible, isn't it? Mm. So it's great meeting all these different people from different countries and having amazing experiences and, like, you know, stuff like that. Is it always great? Because, like, our learners of English, they might not realise what it's really like for us. Is it always great? I mean, what's the flip side? Do you ever... Because a lot of the students who come to London, and I experienced this many times, they're experiencing culture shock, aren't they? Mm. They might not realise it, but essentially it is. They come up against sort of English culture and they find it difficult.
They don't understand it.
They don't understand it. And we're the ones who have to try and explain it to them.
Yeah. Mm.
So have you ever had those experiences where they don't understand something or weird experiences with students, like culture shock experiences?
I remember once I was doing a lesson all about swearing, and this came out of a situation where I had a student that, and I'm going to use a swear word in a moment, so if you're offended by that language,
then just, you know, check yourself, then, ladies and gents,
before you wreck yourself.
Get ready, a swear word is coming.
I'm going to hit you with an F-bomb. So I remember I was about to start a class and it was raining outside, and this Mexican guy came in, Mexican student. Mm-hmm. And he was soaking you top to toe, absolutely soaking wet.
Totally wet in the rain.
And he came in and we all looked at him and he looked at me and he went, "Fucking rain." and I was like, "Excuse me." And he went, "Fucking rain." And I realised that he'd probably heard an English person say that.
Maybe Luke's English podcast.
on the street. Because, you know, in English we often say, "Oh, fucking rain," like that. As in, yeah, this is this... complaining like that.
Fucking rain.
It never rains in England, does it?
Never rains in
never,
England, no.
Ever.
And so I thought, well, I'm going to do a lesson where we talk about what language, what bad words mean and which are acceptable to use. And I remember the lesson started by I got them all the students around the whiteboard and I gave them all pens and I got them to write down every single English swear word that they could think of.
Brilliant.
And at the beginning they were like, "Oh, really? Can we really do this?" And I was like, "Yeah, go for it." So they all wrote all these swear words down. And then I basically crossed off the ones that they should never say. I kind of crossed off the ones which were kind of old-fashioned that nobody ever really says anymore. I talked about severity. I talked about appropriacy, all those kinds of things.
Brilliant.
And I think it was genuinely a pretty good lesson and they seemed to get a lot out of it. But there was one student, I think she was Korean, I can't remember, and she just was really offended as to why I was teaching her how to swear. And I said, "Well, I'm not teaching you how to swear. I'm teaching you which words you absolutely should avoid."
Yeah.
And when you hear these words, because you will hear these words, there's no way you're going to avoid hearing these words, you will know more or less what they mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So that for her, that was quite culturally difficult because she'd been raised in an education system where they would never ever go anywhere near that in a formal English lesson.
Right, but I think it's perfectly valuable stuff to learn.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, English people and native speakers, they swear all the time, and there are strict rules about swearing, as you say. Certain situations when it's kind of appropriate, certain situations when it's definitely not, certain words that you can use, you know, in certain contexts and things like that. Yeah, it's a perfectly valid thing to teach. But yes, that's right, they do come out sometimes, our students come with certain preconceptions about what teaching should be, sometimes it's a bit of a shock for them when we do it in a different way. Yeah, absolutely. Ben, you?
One thing I notice a lot is that some students will arrive in London and they expect just to be spoon-fed with everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the way that we teach is we try and encourage them to be independent, to think for themselves, to generate ideas for themselves, to communicate for themselves. Also within the classroom, you know, they just expect sort of language to be sort of somehow implanted into their head without actually cognitively thinking about it and developing
it.
That thing where they come to the course and they're like, "I've paid my money, I'm in the room, now it's your turn.
Now you put the language in my head and I'm not going to do anything to contribute to that." That's not how it works.
Absolutely.
I think what I used to, I mean, I haven't taught for a wee while now, but when I was a teacher, I found increasingly that the amount of students I would teach, you know, we would have different students every week, often every day, and you kind of, it sounds really terrible to say, but they tend to begin to merge and blur into one to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Not the people themselves, the people are always unique, but the mistakes that they make, and you see the same errors every time. So for a teacher, it's very difficult to kind of keep a fresh view on every single learner. Mm. And I think that is a challenge. And the other challenge, I think, is that particularly with lower level learners, that I always felt that you weren't really getting their true personalities. You weren't getting their full personalities. So you might have a student that could say very little in English, but then they go into their first language and chatting with friends, and all his friends would be screaming with laughter, and you're like, hang on, this guy's really funny, but he cannot show it in English because he simply doesn't have the vocabulary. So it's almost like they just simply cannot express their personalities. And I always found that really difficult, because you really want to help people with that, because that's what language is about.
Yeah,
that's
but
what communication
when,
is
when
about.
You do, Andy, when you do see them through from that very low level sort of elementary stage where they've got those issues, and then they develop into a sort of upper intermediate, maybe higher communicator, and you see that personality developing them, and that's actually very rewarding, I think.
That is rewarding.
It's beautiful, isn't it? When you start with someone who can hardly even say hello in some cases, and you see them develop through. And you know, they go into classes with all the teachers that you know, and they sort of like get the personality sort of like in chunks, and it develops over time. And sort of 9 months later, you meet them again, and they're like, hello, Ben, it's an absolute pleasure to see you. And like, oh my goodness.
What's happened?
Who is this person? And yeah, it's a beautiful experience. Unless, of course, you meet some individual who, you know, after 9 months and after their personality has been revealed, they're revealed to be a horrible person.
And you're like, oh my God, this guy's an asshole.
God, I wish that you couldn't speak English anymore because your personality is horrible. It doesn't happen very often.
I remember very clearly, I used to really encourage students to be honest, and we used to do a lot of, I'd be quite direct with my feedback. You know, if something was wrong, I'd tell them it was wrong, because I think it's the only way they learn. And I always used to say to students, if there's anything you want to tell me, anything that you're not really sure about, just come and talk to me about it.
I love this story.
You know what I'm going to tell you?
I think it's
so
the story.
I remember once I'd finished a class. It was a Friday afternoon. And we'd had a really good class, actually, and I'd finished. And there was a girl from Taiwan, and she just kind of hung around at the end of the class. Mm. And everyone else had gone, and I was just sort of collecting my stuff together. And I said, are you okay? And she went, yeah. And I said, okay. And she came up to me and she went, your eyes are very far back in your head. And I said, okay, all right. And she went, very far back. I was all right. And I said, okay, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
So what does she mean? That your eyes are like, you've got big like craters for eyes.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean,
she was making a statement about your appearance.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she'd been looking at you for like, what, 2 weeks or whatever.
Did you think she had a crush on you?
I don't think so.
She was disturbed.
She was disturbed.
Where are his eyes?
To be honest, I'd had a similar thing. I know you haven't finished the story.
What, about my eyes?
No, not about your eyes. But I've had similar comments where it's like, I've heard students saying, why do English people have dark rings under their eyes?
Because we're knackered.
Because we're tired of these questions.
Because we're tired of these questions. Because, yeah, I've had that many times where, you know, you become the one who has to answer for all of the strange things about your culture. So anything that seems strange to them, you're the one who has to answer for it, which I kind of understand, because who else are they going to ask? And, you know, you're the one that they need
but
to ask.
But you don't always know the answer,
but
do
sometimes you don't know the answer. And, it's, you know, I've had weird things.
But don't you think that we also tend to do that to them a little bit as
of
well?
Of course. Of course we do. Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you get a student from wherever, I don't know, some country, we often don't understand them, and so there's always this thing where neither of us understand each other. Like, you don't understand the students to an extent, they don't understand you. There's lots of misunderstandings. There's huge potential for hilarious comedy and misunderstanding. It's just brilliant. So yes, I've had that before, where students have like, English people, why do they have such pale skin? It's like, well, it's because we don't get much sun, you know. Why does it rain all the time?
That's a common one. Yeah, why does it rain all the time?
I don't know. It's like, Ben, why you have to tell me why it rains? Why it's your fault, Ben. Like, well, I don't know. It's just fucking, it's rain, isn't it? It's just weather. It's weather.
Why do you always eat fish and chips?
Everyone's eating fish and chips all the time.
No,
why?
I have it like once a year.
Why are there two taps in the bathroom? Why?
Two taps in the bathroom.
Well, that's a fair point. I don't know why we have two taps in the bathroom.
Don't get me started on that.
I could go for a few of those, yeah. Two taps in the bathroom.
Driving on the left. Why have we got different types of plugs for the electricity sockets?
Yeah, no sockets in the bathroom.
Why do you have carpets in the bathroom?
Carpet in the toilet.
That's right. Why are your trains...
Why don't you take your shoes off when you go in the house?
Yeah. That's right.
Why do your doors open inwards?
Why is your music so good? they never ask that.
No. Why did you invent everything? No, sorry.
There's lots of questions and things anyway. One of them, sometimes, I've had several times, like, why are English people so pale skinned, and why do you have dark rings around your eyes? And it's like, well, I'm just tired. but this is what the girl was saying to you. It's like, your eyes are deep inside your head.
Well, I still don't really know what she was getting at. I don't think my eyes are that strange.
So she was like, your eyes are deep inside your head.
Yeah,
and you're like, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, I said, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And she went, yes. So,
and you're like, I don't know how to continue this conversation.
I'm none the wiser.
I love that.
And then she kind of moved away backwards and just left the room walking backwards.
She sort of like backed away from you.
Yeah.
As if to say, I don't know what you
sort
are.
Like looking at you like, you know, some sort of crater-eyed strange man.
Oh,
like,
are you a crater-eyed freak? Get back from me, crater-eyed English speaker. Thank you for the lessons, but get back. I don't understand your face. Yeah, well, you know, humans are different and we're weird sometimes, you know, when you meet each other face to face. Like, you know, I mean, I'm sure if I went to some other country like France and learned
France.
Yeah, I'm sure that it would be the same if I'd gone to Taiwan to learn Chinese, whichever version of it is. Yeah. Then I'm sure that I'd have similar experiences of like, you know, why aren't your eyes deep in your head?
Yeah, well, there's all sorts of strange things about what's appropriate to say to somebody. And I think, you know, you can get yourself really upset about it, or you can just think, oh, well, you know, it's one of those things. And I think in certain cultures, it's perfectly acceptable to make comments like that about somebody's appearance. And, you know, there's no point getting offended about it.
I've noticed that certain students from certain countries are not sort of afraid of telling you exactly what they think of your appearance.
Yeah.
Whereas in the UK, we are, you know, we consider that to be very rude to make a direct statement.
We're more reserved, aren't we? You know, we might think it, but we would bite our tongue.
Yeah, we wouldn't make a direct statement about someone's weight, for example.
No.
But I remember once I had a student from Korea, lovely guy. But I remember I was his teacher at the beginning of his time, and he had like, you know, 6 months in London to learn English. And he arrived on his first day and I was his teacher, and he was really shy and really nervous, and he was like having a really bad time, and he was very upset. And he arrived in my class, and lovely bloke, and he happened to be in a lovely class, but there were a class of very talkative students, and he was really shy, and he'd obviously never been in that situation where he had to speak English, you know, fluently with other people. And his English was fine, but he couldn't speak. He was frozen, you know? And I could see it. You know, you see those students who are like, you know,
they can't move and really
struggling.
Yeah,
I had an eye on him, and then after maybe the third day, he was sitting there looking really despondent, and I sat next to him and I was like, are you all right? And he's like, I can't speak English like that. And he started crying.
Oh, shit.
It was really sad. I was like, oh, mate, it's all right. It's okay. Don't worry. You're fine. You're absolutely fine. And I spent a good 15 minutes of my time.
That's a
sitting
long time.
It's a long time.
You weren't paid for that time, were you?
No, 15 minutes
of
my free time.
Out of your heart that time.
Yeah. No, but I sat down with him and I tried to build up his confidence, and I said things like, you know, don't worry, okay? Like this, you're in the London School of English. It's okay now.
What could possibly go wrong?
What could go wrong? Don't worry.
Just that crater eye freak isn't teaching you. Okay.
Yeah, don't worry about
it. You could have had that teacher. I know the crater eyes.
I know you saw Andy Johnson when we walked in. I know you. He looks a bit like Moby, but try not to let that bother you. Okay, everything's fine. And I was like, don't worry. The other students are really sweet. You're in a nice class. Don't worry. Don't worry about making mistakes. I know you've studied grammar for many years and stuff. Just speak. It's fine. And you know. And he was like, oh, thank you. You know. And it was really good. And you know, he came. into life. He kind of came to life over that course, and it was great to see him come, you know, come into himself, whatever. Anyway, sort of 5 months later, I went away to Holland Park to teach other courses. 5 months later, I came back and he was in a class again. I was covering for someone. I was teaching a class. He was in that class.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, there he is, that lovely, sweet, shy guy that I was teaching before. And I was teaching the class, blah, 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 break time. And I turned to him and I was like, how are you? It's been ages. I haven't seen you for ages. And he was like, I think you became fat. I was like, that's the first thing.
First thing he said to you.
That's the first thing you've got to say to me after all this time, all the emotional way that we met each other. And that's the first thing you said.
I gave you 15 minutes of my time.
I know.
And you, that's how you repay me.
Throw the fat comment
but
back
I
at me.
But I think probably for him, that was quite a sincere sort of friendly thing to say. And that he wasn't being fake. He was being really real and honest with
genuine.
Me.
And
maybe he'd just
genuine.
Been doing like adjectives to describe people as well. He just wanted to show you what he'd learned.
He just learned that word.
That's the only one he remembered.
Yeah. And I was like, how are you saying I've got fat? To be honest, I had put on a little bit of weight because I'd been eating lots of curry, you know, as you do.
As one does.
Yeah. So, yes. Yeah, so it can be kind of odd. Yeah. All right. Shall we stop? I feel like we're near the end, but I wanted to get one more story from you, Andy.
Which one was that?
That was the Moby thing that you told me earlier on. Do you mind? Would you mind telling us that story?
I don't mind telling
you.
Well, I think we need to give a bit of background to it first.
Okay, that's fine.
The background is that Andy, despite his crater eyes, looks a little bit like Moby.
To be fair, we should probably try and explain what the three of us look like. I mean, my listeners know what I look like if they've seen photos of me on the website or something. But just to be, you know,
Why don't you describe me?
Okay,
I will describe Ben, and Ben will describe. Well, they all know what you look like.
Yeah,
but you can describe me anyway because it could be interesting.
Why don't you go first? Why don't you describe Luke?
From a language point of view, it could be interesting. Go on then.
So Luke, you're probably about 6 foot tall, are you?
Yeah.
Around that.
Six foot. What's that in centimetres?
I've got no idea.
I'm about 182
centimetres. 182
centimetres.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. He's he's not fat, I wouldn't say. He's not skinny. He's got a strong frame, could we say.
Strong frame?
Yeah.
It comes from rock climbing.
Yeah, he's a rock climber. I don't know if he's ever told you that in the podcast.
Used to be, I don't do it anymore.
He scales mountains, this man. He's like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's got an athletic build. He's got... What kind of hair would you say he's got, Andy?
That's a difficult one. Mousy color.
You know,
it's kind of like not brown, it's not blonde. It's brown, actually.
Light brown. But you know what I've noticed recently? That my hair is going increasingly ginger.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, it started to take on a ginger tint.
Well, they say that if there's a ginger gene in you, it will win out in the end.
It will get there in the end.
You'll get there. It's taken 40 years, but it's pumping out now.
Yeah.
It's pumping out.
It comes out on your beard. Luke's stroking his chin now because
he's ginger chin.
Lots of ginger hairs in his chin.
My chinny chin chin. Can you hear that, listeners? That's my chin. So yeah, when I grow my beard out, then there's quite a lot of it's about 30% ginger.
Okay.
So I'm a ginger ninja. Because, you know, I'm a hidden ginger, you know.
A ginger, as they say
in the UK. We're very cruel about
we
gingers.
We're very sort of, it's almost like racism, actually, isn't it?
Ginger racism in the UK. We are very cruel about the gingers.
In Australia, they call them rangers.
Rangers?
Rangers.
Short for orangutan.
A ranger is short for orangutan.
Yeah, like, oh, Luke, he's a right ranger.
Short for orangutan.
Orangutan, yeah.
Which is that ginger monkey.
Okay, which is far so we're not less quite politically
as,
correct.
Yeah, we're not
so
quite
anyway,
as racist.
Right, I've got a slightly ginger beard, a slightly ginger tint to my hair, but I've got like light brown hair.
Brown hair, which is sort of medium length. It looks like you've had it cut a little while ago. Maybe going slightly thin on the top, or is that am I imagining that?
Oh, yeah, no, it's going a bit thin,
He's going to be bald soon, basically.
Yeah, probably. Don't know. But you know what, Ben? My hair has been getting thin for the last 15 years.
Really? Okay, so there's no, you know.
Slowly, very slowly.
He's got a lot of hair. I'm not saying Luke.
There's nothing wrong with being bald.
Sorry, Andy.
Grass doesn't grow on a busy road.
I like it. Okay. All right, thanks.
Yeah. I don't look. Well, so I could tell you what you're wearing. He's dressed reasonably smart today. He's got a pair of jeans on, some nice brown shoes. Brogues.
What I've noticed about Luke,
you're both rocking the Brogues today.
Okay, yeah, we are actually. What I've noticed about Luke, every time I see him, he seems to be wearing more and more navy. Have you noticed that? Navy blue, dark blue.
Yeah.
That's his thing now.
No, that's true. I do wear a lot of dark navy blue.
Yeah, I do as well, actually. Yeah. Maybe that's a teaching thing.
I don't know. Maybe it's a sign.
You're a teacher, you just wear blue.
I think it's a sign of getting older, maybe.
Getting slightly more conservative
as I get older.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. More rocking the navy blue. I haven't graduated to black yet. I don't wear much black.
It's a bit dark, isn't it?
Bit too black. You know,
bit dark,
yeah. Bit dark, isn't it? Really black, navy blue, yeah. Because at least there's a bit of hope,
yeah.
In that,
it's not all Brexit. You know?
It's not all Brexit and stuff like that. Anyway, let's move on. Move on from that. Okay, so that you've described the way I look. Okay, fine. So now I have to explain what Andy looks like.
Yep.
Okay. So listeners, we mentioned Moby earlier on. And this is going to feed into Andy's story that he'll tell us in a minute. So, listeners, you know who Moby is, right? Moby was a sort of a dance music producer guy from the 90s.
How do you spell that, Lou? Is it
M-O-B-Y.
M-O-B-Y.
B-Y, yeah.
Moby.
Yeah.
He's still going, apparently.
Still going. Still Mobying.
Still mobying on.
He was famous for two things. He was famous for his music, but he was also famous for his veganism.
Was he a vegan?
He was a vegan, yeah.
Still is a vegan,
still
I suppose.
Still is, well...
Once a vegan, always a vegan.
We met a vegan today.
We did meet a vegan today. We had dinner with a vegan. It was very awkward. I ordered a steak.
That's right. We sat down for dinner after the conference today, and we're all sitting around drinking wine and eating and stuff like that. And Andy and Ben and I were like, should we get a steak? We're in France. Let's have a steak. And we sat down. We ordered our steaks, and Andy had this big bloody steak. And he was sitting next to a vegan, and he started... You were making conversation with her.
I jokingly said to her, I'll turn the plate round so the salad is closer to you. And, you know, I was kind of joking about it, but I didn't realise quite the depth of her feeling about it. And we started to... After I'd finished my steak and had this big pool of blood on my plate, she started telling me about how the animal that I'd just eaten had suffered, and she was close to tears. It was quite awkward, actually.
Oh, dear.
What do you say? I mean, you can't take it back. You can't throw the steak back out onto the plate.
You can't shall I stick my fingers down my throat? What shall I do?
I ordered a creme brulee and then I realised she couldn't eat that either because it was dairy. It was very nice.
It can be hard to please a vegan in a French restaurant.
Yeah.
It's not the greatest place to be a vegan in the French restaurant, to be fair.
No, absolutely not.
Anyway, any vegans out there listening, then we're sorry. Andy's steak and Ben's steak and my steak.
And for the animals.
So, we were talking about Moby. He's a vegan, all right, and he also makes music. And his most famous stuff was from the 90s. It's a kind of dance music kind of stuff. Right, so Moby. He's famous because he's from America, right?
Yeah, he's so. American.
He's American, and he's kind of known for being, he's kind of being bald, right? And and talented musically. So Andy looks a bit like Moby, but sort of a more sort of British version.
Yeah, with craters for eyes.
With his eyes are very deeply sunk into the back of his head. Now, imagine a much more handsome version of, much more charming, debonair version of Moby. A lot more stylish. I think Moby... His dress sense is not as good as Andy's. I like the way Andy dresses.
I think Moby tends to dress like a teenager, even though he's well into his 40s now.
Moby wears a lot of T-shirts and a lot of slacks, you know, a lot of loose-fitting sort of sweat shirts and hoodies and things. Whereas Andy, in my experience, is a very, very well-dressed man. And so he's wearing suede brogues on his feet. With
maroon laces.
Maroon coloured laces. He's wearing some lovely blue socks with a light blue topping. He's wearing, I guess, Japanese denim. Is this Uniqlo?
I think it is Uniqlo, yes.
Japanese denim, very, very stylish with the turn-ups. He's turned up the bottom of the jeans. It looks very good. Dark blue Japanese denim and then a light check shirt. And he's got some bracelets on his wrist. He's got like one of those Nike jogging bracelet things. He's a very fit gentleman. He likes to go running. He's a marathon runner. He's in prime physical condition, ladies. And... And then imagine Moby's head on top of this, with the eyes very deeply sunk into the skull.
Yeah, it all goes well until you get to the head and the face.
No, it's a beautiful head. It's a beautiful face. is that too much? Maybe. Okay, so that's Andy Johnson.
Okay, so it's my turn.
Your turn to talk about Ben Butler.
Well,
where do you start?
Ben Butler.
Imagine a middle-aged lady. No, Ben.
I'm 22.
Ben, I don't know how to describe your hair, Ben. Ben's kind of got, it's not really long hair, but it's not short either. But as long as I've known Ben, which has been 13 years, he's had exactly the same haircut.
Scruffy, no?
Slightly longer sometimes, slightly shorter. I suppose the person who he looks most like is a guy called Richard Ashcroft from The Verve.
Definitely.
If you Google Richard Ashcroft Verve, you'll get a picture of him, and that is pretty much what Ben looks like. And in fact, I think that's your Facebook profile.
My Facebook profile picture, and I've never, ever, ever changed it.
It's good. Yeah. It's good. I like that. So Richard Ashcroft was the lead singer of a band from the 90s called The Verve from Manchester. But you do look like you come from Manchester.
I studied in Manchester, so right. There's probably something he's rubbed off on me.
You've got something about that sort of Manchester sort of thing, swagger.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about that Mancunian swagger that rubbed off on you when you studied there. Because you could easily be the lead singer of an indie band from the 90s that went into English teaching. I think that's what's happened. And like, even when you're doing a business English course, you'd like to, you know, you're trying to dress up smart somehow.
But I don't quite pull it off.
You still look like you've just come off stage at Glastonbury. I don't know how you managed to do that.
Ben and I were at a funeral, very sad, we were at a funeral a couple of weeks ago, and he came in his suit, and I still thought, man, he looks scruffy. How's he managed to do that? It's a nice suit. I think it's not that you are scruffy. Well, no, you are scruffy.
It's just how you carry yourself,
I think. You're just a very casual kind of guy.
Yeah.
I mean that in a good way. So Ben's wearing black shoes. They're like boots, I think.
Sort of cross between a sneaker and a boot.
Yeah. They've got big tongues on them, big laces.
Yeah. All right.
He's opted for the blue jeans, which Ben always wears blue jeans.
Regular fit.
I don't do skinny, I'm afraid, of my jeans.
Andy's wearing the slim fit jeans. I'm wearing slim fit jeans as well. And Ben's gone for the regular fit.
Regular, 90s.
Which looks baggy by today's standards.
It does. Yeah.
In the 90s, it worked. That's right.
Imagine the 90s, but not in the 90s. Okay.
And Ben's got like quite a nice grey jumper on it. It's got patterns on it, a little bit like a fisherman's jumper.
Yeah.
It's very nice. And he's wearing, I think, is it a polo shirt under there or is it a proper shirt?
It's a proper shirt.
No, it's a false shirt.
It's a false shirt.
Oh my goodness!
It's a t-shirt with a posh collar.
It's built into the jumper.
it's like a t-shirt with a posh collar.
Yeah. So it looks like a shirt when I wear a jumper, but actually, if I take it off, it's just a t-shirt.
See, that's it, right?
Wow. I've seen everything now.
It looks like it's smart, but actually, it's still casual underneath. It's just casual to the core.
Yeah. Right.
Every time.
Did you wear that to the funeral?
No. Okay, all
right. So Ben, I think Ben probably has loads of jumpers, but they're all like either black, navy blue, or grey.
Yeah, I don't do colours very well, to be honest.
No. But he wears it well.
Okay.
And he's got more hair than Luke and I combined.
That's right.
And he's always had that lustrous hair.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay, then. All right, so there you go, listeners. You've had a full explanation of what we look like. Now then, Andy, what about this story about you and Moby?
I've had, on a number of occasions, people make comments to me about how I look like Moby. So, for example, 4 years ago when I was in Paris, Luke and I were, I think we were leaving a bar.
Yeah.
And there was a group of guys at the next table who all turned around and went, "Etu Moby!
Etu Moby!"
And they started singing a Moby song. And it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, all right, thanks. Yeah.
Just keep walking.
Just keep walking. And then, you know, I remember another time I've been teaching this group of students for about 12 weeks, and there was a girl in there, and I think she was very pretty, and I appreciated her.
You were,
and at the end of the course, she came up to me and she says, "Oh, I something I really want to tell you."
And you were like, "Oh, hello,
oh, hello."
She was like, "Yeah, I've been waiting for this moment." And I was like,
"You're like, I've been waiting for this moment too."
And I was like, "Okay." And she went, "You look like Moby."
And you were like, "No."
Oh man. So anyway, so these things kind of happen every now and again, but I've never genuinely been mistaken for Moby until about a month ago. And I was at Gatwick Airport. I was traveling somewhere for work, and I was in the departures terminal with a couple of colleagues, and this guy just kind of saw me, and he kind of runs across the departure lounge. His big guy bounding across,
pushing other passengers out the way. Get out of the way, I've got to get across the airport.
And he comes up to me and he went, "Moby." "Moby." And I didn't think he was talking to me, and he got right in my face. He went, "Moby, I love your music, man." And I was like, and he went, "I love your music, man." And I looked at him, I said, "I'm not Moby." And he looked at me and he went, "Okay, I know you're just saying that, Moby, and I want you to know that I love your music."
He didn't want to believe that you weren't Moby.
He did not want to believe that I wasn't Moby.
"I didn't just run across this airport departure lounge to be told that you're not Moby. You're Moby, goddammit. I don't care if you're not Moby. You're Moby to me."
And then he kind of followed me. I went into a chemist because I'd had like a stomach upset that week, and he kind of was loitering at the door of the shop.
Waiting for Moby.
I think he was going to ask for my autograph or something. And then I began to think, oh, God, what if everybody thinks I'm Moby? This could be really awkward.
Were you looking around like, oh, God, who thinks I'm Moby? I'm not Moby.
It's not me.
And look at my passport. And I was buying, like, medicine that you have when you've got an upset stomach. And I thought, oh, God, what if it gets in the papers that Moby's got diarrhea?
Breaking news, Moby has diarrhea. This isn't it. Do-do-do-do. Top story, Moby. Diarrhea panic.
Is he safe to travel on a plane?
Will his next album be released early?
Released early, that's how it goes. Anyway, so fortunately he kind of disappeared in the end and I was able to go out, but it was quite a surreal experience, because for someone to when you tell them that you're not the person they think you are, and they go, "No, I know you're lying, you are him. It was very, very strange.
"You're Moby." "No, I'm not." "But you are, though, aren't you?" "No, I'm not." "No, come on, don't believe you are Moby." "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are." "Okay, I am Moby. I knew it. You were Moby." Yeah.
And I just wonder, you know, maybe he, you know, he got on his plane or wherever he was going, and he said, "Oh, you'll never guess who I saw in the airport."
I bet he told all his friends.
Moby.
Yeah.
And he was such a humble guy. He pretended he wasn't Moby.
Yeah.
And my colleagues thought it was hilarious. They didn't bother, like, jumping in and go, "Oh, God, he's not Moby, leave him alone." They didn't say anything. They just acted like they were my entourage, like my bodyguards or something.
"Don't mess with Moby."
Yeah, he's Moby.
Stand back.
Yeah, this is Moby. Trying not to make a big deal out of it. Move aside, please. Moby coming through.
Mr. Moby needs to go and buy some medicine for his tummy.
What's Moby's... is that his first name or his surname? Moby.
Surname Dick, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Moby Dick also
I should defend him.
You really?
I feel like I ought to defend him. I'm sure he's a neat guy.
You reckon? You think he's a really neat kind of guy? Really neat guy. A real stand-up guy? Yeah, yeah, he's certainly talented musically.
Plenty of time for his fans.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, good. I'm glad I got the Moby story out of you there. gentlemen, it's now 25 past midnight.
Wow.
And I've got to work in the morning.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so I think that we're going to have to call the podcast to a close here. Thank you very much for appearing on this episode of Luke's English Podcast.
Thank you.
I think this is probably going to be divided into two episodes.
Wow.
Okay.
Two for the price of one.
Double dose.
The Moby episode and the non-Moby episode.
That's right, yeah. I don't know what I'm going to call them, but I'll find something, some sort of descriptive name. All right then, so I'm not going to be there to see your talk tomorrow, Ben.
I know, you're going to miss a real delight, I must say, and I'm very disappointed that you're not going to be in attendance, but
yeah,
next time.
I'm sorry, I'll be there in spirit.
Yes.
All right, then.
People okay. say that. What does that even
I
mean?
I don't really know.
I'll be there in spirit.
I think that means that somehow...
It just means I won't be there.
Yeah.
I won't be there.
But, I'll be there yeah. in spirit, which means I won't be there, and I probably won't even be thinking about it.
Yeah.
But I think it just means that somehow their spirit will leave their body, and then it's like, don't
go
give me,
and observe your talk. But
don't give me that spiritual nonsense. Just you're, either well, you're there
you
or you're
were,
not.
You were concerned about filling the place. It'll be full of ghosts.
Well, I might have a load of spirits there.
Spirits.
Well, that might be good, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe I'll turn it into a seance.
Just make sure they all sit in the same area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay then. All right. Well, good luck for the talk.
Thank you very much.
And I'll see both of you tomorrow. Have a great night's sleep in this fantastic futuristic hotel that you're staying in.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right then. So, cheers.
Bye.
Cheers,
Luke.
Bye.
So there you go. That was Andy Johnson and Ben Butler. And I have to say, it was a lot of fun to have Andy and Ben on the podcast and just to see them and sort of spend some time with them again. It was really good fun. I hope you enjoyed it too. I particularly enjoy Andy's anecdotes about the student who told him, the student who seemed so worried about his appearance. Oh, your eyes are very deeply sunk into your skull. Just such a bizarre experience. I don't know, maybe from the point of view of this student, you know, Andy probably does look a little different to how she or he, I can't remember. Andy probably does look a bit different to how that student expects people to look, you know? I mean, if you've ever had an experience of like going abroad and coming into direct contact with people from a completely different culture, people who look and behave differently, then sometimes this kind of stuff happens. And the best thing to do is just to laugh about it, really, rather than trying to worry about it and take it too seriously. And also, I just love the story about the guy who stopped Andy, convinced that he was Moby. You're Moby! I just love it. All right, anyway... it was lots of fun having Andy and Ben back on the podcast, and I hope you liked it too. Don't forget that you can get 10% off all of the online courses run by the London School of English by going to londonschoolonline.com and using the offer code Luke10 at checkout. And if that's not for you, then maybe you could recommend that to someone else and they can use Luke10 to get that discount as well if they want to. All right. I don't know if you can hear the noise. Can you hear that? Let me open the window and you'll definitely hear it. You hear all of that? Oh, it's so noisy. To be honest, I've been trying to record this all morning, and every time I switch on the microphone, they start drilling and sawing and hammering and stuff. Basically, I don't know what's going on, but I think obviously, it's some people doing some work on one of the buildings. But it's right next door to my flat. And they're just making tons of noise. And they've been climbing around all over the roof of the building. Just kind of climbing around. They don't seem to have any safety stuff. They don't have ropes to and things like that to keep them safe. They're just jumping around all over the rooftops. And we're on the sixth floor. If they just slip and fall, then, you know... it would stop the noise. I know that much. But anyway, I thought I'd manage to do it. I thought I'd be able to get through the whole recording without them interrupting me. But no, there they go again, soaring. I don't know what they're doing. Are they kind of creating something? I don't know. It's a bit like, I don't know if you ever saw that TV show from America that was on TV during the 80s and 90s called The A-Team. The A-Team. You must know it. The A-Team is about this kind of like group of ex-military guys from America who were serving in Vietnam, and they go AWOL. They go absent without leave. They disappear from the army, and they go back to America and they become like this group of freedom fighter type guys. They're basically, I don't know quite how you describe them, but they're a gang of these guys who drive around in a black truck and they go around sort of solving crimes and saving people who are in trouble. And they're constantly being chased by this military leader who wants to kind of enlist them back in the army again. One of the things about the A-Team is that at the end of every episode, they would be trapped in some situation. Like they'd end up getting trapped in a garage or trapped in a in a car showroom or something with all the bad guys outside. And then, and they would, you know, you'd think, how are they going to get out of this situation? How are the A-team going to escape from this? And then there's a montage and you hear lots of noise, lots of sort of hammering and sawing and drilling like this, all this stuff. You hear all that noise with music in the background, and then suddenly they all pop out, and there's they kind of pop out of the garage door, and they've created a tank or something. They've kind of, you know, clat, hammer, drill, and they just explode out of the building, and they've created a tank, and then they kind of basically kill everyone and leave. They kill everyone, but no one, you never see anyone die. There's never any blood. It's violence without consequence. That's the A-team. You must know the A-team. I bet it was on TV in your country, just with a different name. This is the way the A-team used to begin.
10 years ago, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
Right? Does that make sense? It had George Peppard as Hannibal. And there was... What's this guy's name? Dirk something? The sort of handsome guy was called Dirk Benedict, and his name was Face. Yeah, Dirk Benedict. There was some, like, sexy girl in there, too, who used to work with them. And then there was a crazy guy who used to fly a helicopter, and his name was Murdoch, Mad Dog Murdoch, played by Dwight Schultz. And then, of course, there was Mr. T, the big, sort of huge, muscly black dude, Mr. T, who played the part of B.A. Baracus, who was scared of flying. You know, even though he was like this big, tough guy, he was scared of flying. I ain't flying, fool. I ain't gonna go on no plane, Hannibal. You know, you must... All right. You're probably thinking, Luke, what are you talking about? Well, if you'd seen the show, you'd know what I'm talking about. Anyway, as I said, at the end of the show, they always end up getting trapped in some garage, and there's a montage of them building something with lots of noise, like hammering and sawing and drilling, and then they just suddenly pop out with a... They've created their own, like, helicopter out of a refrigerator. You know, like, they're stuck in a sort of kitchen or something, and all they've got is a microwave, a few kitchen knives, and a fridge freezer, and they manage to turn that into some sort of, like, knife-throwing sort of bulletproof tank, which they use to then save the day. That's obviously what's going on the roof of the building next to me. I think it's just the A-team, and they're going to, like, make a helicopter or something that's going to... I don't know, maybe they're going to create some sort of suction machine that will suck all of the pollution out of the air in Paris or something like that. I don't know. All right, this is a slightly ridiculous end to the episode, but that's nothing new, is it? Oh, no, it's not. Thank you very much for listening all the way to the end of this episode, and I'll speak to you again on the podcast soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription,
You will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.